Welcome you all to the ICSA first Sunday of the month speaker meeting, story time, we like to call it. We've been doing this now, I think now for upwards of 2 years. I could be wrong on that, but it's been a good stretch through COVID, and every month we get to visit another group in another part of the world. And I'm really pleased that we're going to be hearing from my friends in Tulsa, a group I have a very a great love for. And so I'll introduce to our moderator for the day in a second. But in the meantime, I think just wanted to ask if there's any announcements. Now would be a good time to do that. I have a couple, so I'll kick off. After our last conference at the end of October, a new board was elected. A couple of the members are here today. And one of the first orders of business was to get a new website, temporary or under construction website, sorted and set up so that we could build upon it. Just something as a lay a new foundation that wouldn't require too much legwork by too many technical people. So a new site's been launched. I'm going to put the link in the chat. Actually, Joe just did at asecular.org. And we're going to be building it out in the new year, but it's fresh, it's clean, and easy to manage because it's built on Wix. I don't know if some of you are familiar with that program, but it makes websites easy. So please check that out. We will be looking for groups to volunteer for story time in the new year. So if you or you know somebody that may want to have your group host, please DM me or Margarita in the chat, and that would be terrific. And finally, going into the new year, January 14th is the next ICSA board meeting. And at that meeting, there'll be a lot of agenda items, but we're going to be looking for some committees to be set up, volunteers. And if you would like to play a role, if you didn't have a chance to put your name on the list at the conference, if you want to be available for some service in the new year, not any kind of long-term 2-4 year commitment, but just serve on some committees, let us know so we can keep you and your email available and in the loop so we can advise you of committee opportunities coming up. That's what I've got. Any other announcements for today? I think Margarita's got an announcement.
There's a survey being sent out by the GSO about the AA International Intervention in Vancouver in 2025 about how to end big meetings. And typically, I understand Lord's Prayer has been used, but they're asking for your vote on other options. There will be seven of them, and three of which are secular for you to choose on. I'm going to put the link to the survey in the chat.
Thank you, Margarita. I don't know if that was just a Freudian slip there, calling it an intervention.
Yeah.
2025 intervention. Well, it could be that. But in any event, if that's all the announcements for the day, I want to get on to to our speaker. So I have the privilege of introducing a dear friend of mine, somebody I've been able to spend some in-person time, even in this Zoomiverse. And even though he lives in Oklahoma, he's driven miles to get together with me. So I really consider him a dear friend in and out of this program, and let him introduce his group and Tulsa and his members to you. And so at this point, let me introduce Jeff from We Agnostics.
All right. Well, it is great to be with you guys today. Our group started we just celebrated our fourth anniversary in September, and it was a really great event. Joe C. spoke for us and kind of lit everybody up. So that was quite a treat. And I was just thinking about our group prior to getting started here. And I can pinpoint exactly, not to the day, but exactly the event that was the seed that was planted that got this group going. I thought I'd just share that with you really quickly, and then we'll get on to our speakers. But it was approximately 4.5 years ago, maybe a little bit longer. And I was sitting in a traditional meeting. We were reading a story from the Big Book. You may be familiar with the story. It's A Drunk Like You. And it's a story of a Jewish fella that was coming to AA. And I'm going to read you exactly the paragraph that set me on fire. So here it goes. The last big hurdle was closing the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. As a Jew, I was uncomfortable with it and decided to talk to my sponsor about it. So I said, the Lord's Prayer bothers me. I don't like closing with it. And he said, what's the problem? Well, I'm Jewish. It's not a Jewish prayer. Well, then, he said, say it in Jewish. I said, it'd still be the Lord's Prayer. It was my turn to share on that. And I said, that was a really dismissive answer his sponsor gave him. And that kind of thing is starting to irritate me about AA when we claim to be not affiliated with any group. I said, next time I chair a meeting, I think I want to close with the prayer to the flying spaghetti monster. And boy, did that light the group up. We had a counselor there from one of the alcohol treatment centers, and he started cussing and swearing. He was really, I pushed his button, I guess. And after that meeting closed with the Lord's Prayer, a fellow came up to me named Alex, and he said, I'd like to talk to you about that. This kind of stuff has been bothering me too. And that planted the seed. You know, a few months later down the road, we started this group. We asked the okay to meet at the Thai club in Tulsa. We started this group and we plotted along with four or five people. And now our attendance is pushing 20 regularly. We have an online presence. So we have a hybrid meeting. And it was good to back. I forget, we've probably been back meeting in person with this hybrid for about 4 months now. But our group has grown and I've got to meet so many really neat people. That's when I really started investigating secular AA, and it's changed my whole recovery program. And I'm so grateful that I was sitting in that meeting and said that, and somebody came up to me. In fact, later on, I found out that Charles, who's going to speak for us this morning, was also at this meeting. I didn't know him at the time, but we were talking about it. He said, I was there. And man, that counselor went back to the treatment room just cussing and swearing, blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't know. But anyway, from that little start, here we are today. And gosh, it's great to be with you. For several years, I've looked forward to meeting lots of you in person at the convention, and it hasn't worked out because of COVID. But one of these days, and along the way, I have had a chance to get together with some folks in Cincinnati. I drove 700 miles up to Cincinnati to have a cup of coffee with them, and it was great. It was great. So that was a trip that was well worth it. And like I said, I look forward to meeting more of you in person in the future. We'll see if that happens. Anyway, I'm really happy to turn this over to our speakers. We're gonna start with Charles, and we each have, let me see what time it is. It's about 10 after. We each have a little bit short of 15 minutes. So you can take, 12, 15 minutes, and then we'll pass it on to Joe. So we have a mix here. We have a couple of newer people and a couple that have been around the secular program a little bit longer. So we'll see how that goes. We're going to be talking about how in the world we ended up here in secular AA, basically. So, Charles, it's all yours.
All right. I'm Charles. I'm an alcoholic. First of all, thank you for asking me to do this. I've never really been asked to speak before. So it's an honor and a privilege. I'll just get to it. I accidentally found secular AA about this time, about a year ago. I will have a year of sobriety on the 12th of December of this year. I'm 44 years old. I went to my first treatment facility in 2003. The Air Force sent me there because I was always getting in trouble for drinking, alcohol-related incidents, coming to work drunk, and alcoholism had finally caught up with me in my early to mid 20s. Prior to that, I was drinking alcoholically right out the gate. I drank alcoholically the first time I got drunk. I blacked out, puked on everybody, and I thought it was like the coolest thing ever. And before I started drinking, I was sort of indoctrinated into the 12-step universe. My mother, rest her heart, she died from this disease. She died from a drug overdose in 2016, opioids, and she just couldn't get it, right? And a lot of that has to do with why I gravitated towards secular AA. I remember being a little kid here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, being taken to AA meetings back in the late 80s. People still smoked cigarettes, and I was a little kid in the corner pouring coffee for all these crotchety old drunks and junkies. And I just remember, as a little boy, like hearing all these war stories from people in recovery. And I, I knew all about AA. I knew all about 12 steps. I was a member of Alateen by the time I was 10 years old. You know, I've been speaking to people that sponsored my mother and other people in the fellowship since I was a little boy, you know, and all that information didn't stop me from becoming an alcoholic because, you know, I was scared of drugs, especially the needles and the powders, because that's what my mother was into. And I saw that, like, how horrible that was. But drinking to me was like something foreign because I wasn't exposed to that until my parents got remarried. My dad was in the army. He was a violent drunk. So all my like fantasies of my dad being like a hero, G.I. Joe, this guy in my head that existed only in my head. When I realized what he was like when he was drunk, a violent, abusive, hateful, bigoted, angry, scary person, that still didn't stop me from drinking, you know, because I didn't understand how to put two and two together. I started drinking when I was 12 years old in Germany. My dad was stationed in Germany at the time. And so it was just this perfect storm of, you know, the right time, the right age, the right environment, and the right chemistry. Was it nature? Was it nurture? It was both. And it was accelerated. So I've had my fair share of horrific, tragic atrocities with alcohol and drugs. And when I started going to AA in my early 20s, I was like, okay, I know all about AA. I know all about it. You know, I've got a leg up on these people that don't know about recovery because I've been exposed. Be that as it may, when I started going to traditional meetings back in the early 2000s, I immediately realized that like these people are overzealous religious fanatics. The vast majority of these people are. I'm not a little kid anymore. I'm an adult, and I'm still young enough to kind of like not really buy into the I'm a full-blown alcoholic. Maybe I'm just young, making bad decisions, you know, and I'm desperate enough to come in here and try. Or at least I'm being ordered by the military to come in here because I have to. I should give it a shot. You know, I did the same old song and dance. Like I come in, do steps 1, 2, and 3. I wouldn't get a sponsor. I wouldn't work steps. I'd go back out. Things would get worse. The repercussions would be worse. I'd get desperate. I'd come back in. I'd do 1, 2, 3. And this went on and on and on for almost 20 years. And I realized that like I have a huge resentment towards traditional AA because being from where I'm at, I grew up, you know, growing up in the belt buckle, the Bible belt, having not only, you know, Bible thumping evangelical Christianity shoved down my throat, I also got traditional mainstream 12 step indoctrination shoved down my throat. And I rebelled against it because I knew that it didn't work. I watched my mom come in and out and in and out and in and out my entire life until she died because she kept doubling down and tripling down and digging her heels into the traditionalist faith healing sort of approach that keeps people kind of stuck in their ways because they never develop awareness. They never start practicing meditation. They never change their diet. They never change the information they're putting in their head. I still go to traditional meetings and I sit in traditional meetings and, you know, I hear people repeat the dogmatic religiosity slogans and it still bothers me, but it doesn't make me like want to jump and scream and run out of the room and go get drunk because I found secular AA. I was a patient at that rehab center when Jeff's talking about that meeting. This was back in 2017. I was in that meeting. And my counselor was that counselor. And we were reading that story with all my experience of coming in and out and, you know, doing AA in different parts of the country and different parts of the world when I was in the military and whatnot. And then coming back to my home of origin, the Bible Belt, and experiencing that and realizing like, oh, crap, I'm screwed, man. If this is what I have to do, when they say fake it till you make it, like they really do mean fake it, like just pretend like you believe, even if it doesn't resonate with you as truth. And I knew somewhere that that's not, there's got to be an alternate choice. And, you know, I had people suggest that I go to We Agnostics. I went to that meeting about a year ago. I saw Jeff there. He told that story about that meeting. And I was like, oh, that was you. I was in that meeting, you know? And that's just one example of the countless times I've sat in meetings and people, like, they browbeat with that dogmatic religious stuff, but pseudo-scientific psychobabble, as I call it, you know, it sounds like religion, but it's not religion. We're spiritual. We're not religious. We're open-minded up to a certain point. But once you start saying that you don't believe in a God, then, you know, anything but that, God forbid that you say you're an agnostic or an atheist. That's so blasphemous to people that have that rigid sort of thinking. And it gets in the way of recovery, you know, and I cannot stress how much I've grown and how much it's allowed me to just be in recovery and not get caught up in the debating society. You know, I feel like secular AA is AA and traditional AA is slowly morphing into this like weird culty, like denomination of Christianity that the people in the forest are so deep in the forest, they can't see the trees for what it is, you know? And if you don't recite the cliches and if you don't repeat the slogans and if you don't, you know, drink the Kool-Aid, then you're not sober, you know? And if you don't say that you believe that God is doing everything for you, that you're somehow not as sober as the person that does, you know, proselytize and preach, and it convolutes and distorts the message of recovery. I'm here to help people stay sober. I'm not here to convert people to believe in whatever. Thank God for secular AA. That's all I got.
That was terrific, Charles. Thanks for telling your story. Appreciate it a whole bunch. We had kind of a last minute awareness of the meeting this Sunday, and all four of these guys just said, I'll speak. I was so impressed. We're going to move on to another one of our newer members, Joe S. He's been with us a couple months now, I think. And Joe, if you're ready to go, you can unmute. Have at it.
All right. Hi, I'm Joe, and I'm an alcoholic. I grew up going to the same little church that my mom and my grandma went to, and my mom stopped going, but I was allowed to go. And my brother, little brother, didn't want to go, but I still wanted to go. So over the years, my entire childhood and teenage years, they would drive me clear across Oklahoma City to the Little Britain Baptist Church that I wanted to go to and be a part of, and continue to go to for 28 years, up to and including all the marriage counseling that they give before you get married. And there's some law in Oklahoma where it makes your license cheaper. So I took part in that too. And I was really involved, you know, every time the doors were open, up until my wife of 3 years decided to take off with my 3-month-old baby. Her mother was best friends with the landlady, so that lease got ripped up. It was the same month that every tech support call center in the country got closed down at the same time, and they moved all of the tech support over to India, which was ironic because it was America Online where I had been working for 6 years. So that was all gone. Bank account emptied out, jobless, homeless, carless, penniless, wifeless, and new baby daughterless. And no one of these people wanted to intercede. There was not a single point where the spirit that I had been a part of for all this time laid it on a single person's soul to intercede for me and go to those people and say, hey, this is crazy. This isn't in the best interest of this little child. This isn't how we do families and marriages and all that stuff. And none of that materialized. None of it happened because I guess I just didn't have enough faith is what I was told. You know, if I just wait and wait and wait for the spirit to work in the lives of someone, then maybe it will change. And in the meantime, that failing me, I went with the next best thing to keep myself from acting for my selfish desires and doing whatever crazy thing, because it was a total meltdown in my head and my heart and my spirit. So I drank myself oblivious. I did. I drank all the time every day so that I wouldn't do something rash, waiting for the spirit to move and maybe get a hold of somebody and say, hey, this isn't the right thing for the baby or for him, or for the family, or for nobody. And about 2 years of that kind of mess and couch surfing and, you know, just barely existing. I was breathing, but I wasn't alive. I said, hey, I guess either the Army will pay for my law degree because I've already got my bachelor's and I don't need that, or they will blow me up and I'll get $500,000 insurance payout and my daughter will be set up. Because I couldn't keep the job at the toy store or the dollar store or the bank or the master's degree program I tried to start, because as soon as I got used to the routine, there was only one thing on my mind, and it was, hey, I'm supposed to be raising my daughter, not visiting her for a 2-hour stretch where they're telling the same police that I don't have a car seat, just like they did earlier this week, last month, last year. They kept it up. No spirit ever got to even the people that were seeing all this madness and said, hey, stop this. This isn't in the best interest of the kid. So that plagued me more than my ability to keep a job or study or move past it or get over it. You don't get over having your kids stolen and having her parents tell you that she's out of state when really she's not out of state. She's just over there at their house and they won't let me see him. It wasn't enough to have full custody. Let's make it be supervised visits. And when the judge won't do that, we'll just keep him in court and make up stuff and pour it on like syrup and see what sticks. So yeah, the Army was a better alternative because I had two good outcomes that could have happened. Long story short, neither of those good outcomes happened because they made me a combat medic. And I ran with the infantry and the tankers and the scouts and the snipers and the mortars and the explosive ordnance disposal and the convoys. And wherever it wasn't bloody enough, they would just pick me up and move me somewhere where it was because they needed me to be elbows deep in blood and guts of our fellow Americans and little Iraqi kids and just everywhere all the time. That first tour got extended. And the day my 4-year contract was supposed to end that I had signed was the day I set foot back in Iraq for my second tour because they stop-lost me. I got to see what people do to each other when they really are being adversarial. I got to learn what happens when people are just so indifferent to humanity that that's how they treat each other. And that's what I was exposed to. And that's what I learned instead for both tours. And when I was done, much like what Charles said, the Army said, okay, we'll give you a 45-day inpatient treatment for your alcohol problem and then an honorable discharge. Or we'll give you a medical discharge right now. What do you want? I said, I'll take the honorable discharge that I earned and I'll go to the treatment program. But hey, the wife and her parents who financed all that stuff and the best man from our wedding that she ran off and married while she was still married to me because the judge threw the divorce out. Yeah, the bigamy. Nobody cared about any of that. And nobody cared that I was in treatment getting sober. So I stopped getting sober and I started taking it out on anybody that I was around and anyone who would take me in, and I'd make their life a living hell. And the VA would say, hey, maybe you need treatment. So I went back to treatment. And I was exposed to the same 12 steps that everybody else hears. And I said, yeah, well, that's a good idea. But I know for a fact that the power greater than myself, which does exist, because there's, you know, societal power. There's the law, you know, the system of judges and the country that I live in and all these powers greater than myself. They are not going to restore me to sanity. I don't need to have faith in that because I can see that they won't. It's a real stumbling block getting past that step two when step three is just a big straight lie right to your face. I mean, it made it really hard, but I'd finished the program. I'd have a sincere desire not to drink because I wanted to show them that I could be the man that deserved to raise his daughter. And I wasn't even getting to be a visitor at that point. I don't know what my daughter's voice sounds like. I don't know what she really looks like, any of that stuff. That was a big stumbling block for me. And it just kept going like that. It even kept going for the 10 months where my wife left the best man from our wedding that she had married. And instead of trying to put our family back together, she just brought a magnifying glass up to Tulsa and said, here's a very small microcosm of what's been going on. We're going to say, for our daughter's sake, you need to give her time and you need to give her space. You need to give her time. You need to give her space. As far as healing goes, let that counselor spend 1 hour a week. That state-appointed counselor whose job it is to make sure she's not being starved and make sure she's not being raped. That person is supposed to fix all the damage of those 13 years, not us. And after 10 months of that, I couldn't take it anymore. So she ground up my psychiatric meds and my drinks until I had my meltdown that she could take to court, get a protective order, and keep my daughter from me legally now until she was 19 and a half, in which time she became a runaway. Now, she became a runaway at 16 years of age while I was in my first year of recovery. Because I finally decided, hey, I need to get sober whether they can see me or not. And I had the gift of desperation and the bottom shelf drunk, the low, kind of low, where you've lost everything and destroyed everything, that made me desperate enough to do the 12 steps and say the God stuff and listen to the Lord's Prayer, whether I wanted to believe it or not. I needed to get sober. It had to change because I could see the chapter was closing where I was going to be the father of a little kid and raise a kid. I was just going to be a relative to an adult daughter now. And I was still destroying everything around me, trying to pause time and hold on to that pause button until somebody came to their senses, which just straight up didn't happen. So I needed to come to my senses. And I went to the meetings and I took it seriously this time. And I took it seriously for years. And I had to filter and figure out and try to come to some kind of compromise as to what a higher power greater than myself would actually look like. And that caused me to go to a whole lot of meetings, all over the place, different meetings, because what I needed was to expand my circle of people that were interested in recovery more than I needed to hear, just wait and let God do it all. If you just wait, God will do it all. Well, that didn't happen for me. So I needed to hear other things than that. And I needed to keep going around. And finally, I came to the secular meeting of We Agnostics, where that wasn't even part of it. You see, I had developed a sense that no, I by myself could not get sober or stay sober. And it makes it a lot easier when I'm going to meetings, as opposed to how justified I was in getting drunk and messed up all the time. Because if you had a situation as bad as mine, you'd get drunk too. Years of that didn't do me any good either. So going to the meetings helped, and going to a secular meeting made it a whole lot easier because it stripped away all of that. Hey, wait for the good stuff to happen. And I was able to express, you realize that each and every one of those steps, at the end of the day, I have to do something. I have to do the next thing in the next step. I have to do it. I have to do it, whatever I want to believe. And I don't do the things that I personally would want to do. My basis nature isn't what I do. I do things for recovery that are outside of myself. And this just makes it a whole lot easier. And I'm really glad to see all the people over here on my computer screen now. And I'm just really thankful that you guys have asked me to share. Thanks.
Oh, man. Thank you, Joe. Thanks for sharing your story. All right, let's see. How about Steve? Now, he's been at our physical meeting, but he lives about an hour and a half drive away from Tulsa, so we usually see him on the Zoom meetings. But it is wonderful to have you with us this afternoon, Steve.
Thanks, Jeff. My name's Steve. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much for having me, y'all. I will start with I am an educator. I am a queer man in Oklahoma. I grew up Southern Baptist. So, I mean, if a lot of my share kind of centers around some of the topics that would naturally come up from those, you know, mashing identities, then well, there you have it. I found secular AA during the pandemic, like I think perhaps a few others in here. Let me back up just real quick. I've never been to a secular meeting where they've told me you have to deny God before you can work the steps. They've never told me that in a secular meeting, right? And yet whenever I go to a traditional meeting, I would hear, be honest with us and tell us that you believe in God. That's maybe not what they were saying, but that's like the subtext that I was hearing a lot of times. Like, you got to be honest with us. And deep down, you really do believe in God. So just go ahead and say that. And I'm like, I can't. Which one do you want? Be honest or say that? I can't do both, right? My journey to AA in general started with being in treatment. I was starting to drink heavier in my 20s. I wasn't raised by alcoholic parents, but I guess I found it on my own, found it honestly. When I was in detox, actually, and they were telling me, hey, have you thought about AA? I was already trying to put conditions around what my recovery experience would look like, namely by saying like, oh, is there, profession specific AA? I want to go to a kind of AA group where only people who are like me basically are other teachers. And they were like, no, I don't think that's a thing around here. Just go try a meeting out. Thankfully, at my first home group, I found my first sponsor who was very accommodating on my discomfort, I guess we would say, with the God question. He had no problem saying that he believed in a God as his higher power and that he prayed, etc. It was a very non-traditional understanding of God, definitely not the Southern Baptist understanding of God that I had as a kid. When I came to the meeting, I heard all these kind of buzzwords that I remember from my childhood, even things like fellowship, right? Like when people talked about the fellowship of AA, and I'm like, hey, fellowship to me as a kid was the fellowship hall in the church. It's where we went and ate casseroles together, after funerals or weddings or whatever. Definitely the word faith. I didn't want to have any talk about faith. And even just the term spirituality. And one of the gifts that I've gotten from secular AA is to be able to reclaim some of that terminology that I was familiar with, right? And it meant something to me in one context. But once I left that community, I was like, well, I got to be done with this language too. So I moved to this town that I live in right before the pandemic hit. And I attend a traditional home group, and I still go there today. I'm the chair of the group conscience, and I've just taken a position with our district as webmaster. But the thing is, I'm thankful that I found that group of, they became my friends. I moved up here to try to get my marriage going again. It actually fell apart during the pandemic, but I had people surrounding me who I could call on. They went immediately to Zoom meetings once news of the pandemic started coming around. So they were very responsible in that respect, but there was still just something missing there. I couldn't relate to everybody in this group saying, well, I mean, yeah, we just pray about it. We just pray to our God and that's it. And I'm like, well, that part's a little tougher for me. In hearing Jeff speak actually at a district conference on how they work individual steps, I was like, oh, I got to call this guy. And I got invited to We Agnostics and, been trying to be faithful to those meetings ever since. As an educator, I try to be the teacher that I needed as a scared little queer kid in the South. Do you know what I mean? I needed somebody like that, and I didn't have it for the most part. And so, I want to be the kind of trustworthy adult for these teenagers who they can reach out to and say, hey, this is what I'm going through, and to be open and honest about those things. And we work towards resolution. It's never just about staying in the problem, but we find solutions together. And that absolutely informs not only the way that I approach AA, but the people that I choose to surround myself with in AA, or people who are of that mold as well. I believe that, my classroom is like a practice field, right? Like it's where, because I teach social studies, it's a practice field where we learn to be informed citizens. Because in our state, they've got everybody convinced that we're turning kids into transgender, communist, atheist, militant, whatever, whatever. And it's like, I barely have time to get to the Constitution, guys. Like we're working hard, So the classroom's a practice field for how to be an informed citizen. For me, the AA meeting is a practice field for how to just get along with people, right? That's just something that I needed. I need room to come and stretch out my imperfections and to lay my crap on the table and just tell on myself a little bit. And then hear other people when they're like, hey, I tried this. It works for me. Why don't you try that? At that point, it became more of a participation thing and rather than just a spectator sport, because I definitely wanted to be involved. There are three particular steps that secular AA has really opened up in my mind that I just want to run through real quick and to the topic of, how I found secular AA and what it's done for me. The first step in stating that, like, I'm powerless over alcohol, because I was scared of the phrase higher power. But the first step, you know, the phrasing powerless over alcohol, that means on the scale of power, I'm here and alcohol is here. It's higher up. It has more power than me. So it's my responsibility to find a power greater than that, because I'm not it. On my own, I'm not it. And so that kind of taught me to have not faith in other people, as in I expect Jeff to die for my sins. Not today, anyways. I'll let you know, Jeff. but like, can I trust what another person says and the way that they've molded their lives and the improvement that it's produced? Can I try that for myself? First of all, am I even worthy of trying that for myself? Have my sins of the past rendered me like unworthy of finding happiness? And I found people who felt the same exact way I did, who walked around with like constant imposter syndrome, not just in their jobs or their families, just in their lives. And they talked about how like that was a lie I was telling myself. And I heard that in these rooms in a completely secular context. It required no supernatural intervention to realize that thing. And that was so critical for me just to hear one other person say that. One of the biggest steps that's been, I guess, bolstered by secular AA for me is the fourth step. My favorite part of the fourth step with my first sponsor was running through my resentment list, because he told me, all right, write down your resentments. And I was like, yes. I was so scared of this step, but they told me, write down your resentments. I said, let's do it. I've got plenty of resentments to go through. And I absolutely had to put on there not just church and the church system, churches that I grew up with, that belonged on my resentment list. The God idea, spirituality in general, I absolutely had to work through my resentments towards spiritual institutions so that I could have a spiritual experience of my own in a secular way. This does not mean forgiving harms done and harms that continue to be done by those institutions. But in fact, working through those resentments through a secular program has allowed me to express genuine concern, not a self-seeking concern, but a genuine concern that calls out these things whenever I see them and how they affect communities that I belong to. So that's another benefit of secular AA. And then the 11th step, and this is where I had to adapt. My meeting closes with my in-person meeting, home group, closes with the Lord's Prayer. And I get up and I say it with them. Because to me, what prayer, what that word has become, is being willing to ask for help. All they're doing, whether they're praying to anybody or not, I don't know, I'm agnostic. But they're asking for help. And it's a genuine reminder when I say those words that I don't got this all figured out. I need to be clothed. I need to be fed. I need to receive wisdom from people. And regardless if it means anything in any supernatural sense or not to me, it just reminds me to ask for help. I was down with the meditation part that the program talked about, because everybody knows how to meditate. If you know how to worry, if you've ever worried about one thing, you've meditated. You've practiced meditation. And so I had the meditation thing down, but the prayer thing, I was like, oh, I don't know about that. Prayer is just me being willing to ask for help. Bottom line. So I am grateful for rooms like this, where I can be honest. And again, not be honest and tell us you believe in God, but be honest and tell us you don't have to figure out. Be honest and tell us you're a mess. And additionally, the counsel that I get and the advice and the wisdom that I get and the suggestions I get from secular AA are not couched in any way by like an agenda other than looking out for another alcoholic. There's no language I have to avoid. There's no like, it's much more expressive and open that I found. And it's informed how I go back to my traditional home group and be like, oh, I don't want what that person has. And that's okay. It's working for them, but I don't want that. So let me offer what I have. Again, try to be the person that I needed in early recovery, the way that I try to be the person that I needed as a student. And the gifts keep coming, man. They really do. So eternally grateful for groups like this, for folks like y'all, for letting me be a part and showing me the way. Thanks, guys.
Oh, thanks, Steve. Thanks for saying y'all. Made me feel like I was in Oklahoma. Okay, and finally, we're going to ask Jay to speak. And I met Jay a couple of years ago, too. We had a secular meeting down in the suburb below Tulsa. Our district chairperson walked by and saw a sign about it. He said, Jeff, here's your there's a meeting down there. It's called the Agnostics. I said, well, I'll go down there this week and meet them. So I went down there and I met Jay, and just, I'll take 1 minute. We were in, I think the very first time I shared in that meeting, I saw Jay's antennas go up. And the first time he shared in that meeting, my antennas went up. And so we share a common origin of growing up as a cult member. I guess I don't need to mention the name of the cult, but anyway, we've had great fun ever since. And I'm so glad I went down there to meet him. And he's a great contributing member to our We Agnostics group in Tulsa. So Jay.
I'm Jay, I'm an alcoholic. And thank you for that introduction, Jeff. That was, I will say the cult later on for sure. Appreciate everyone share, Charles and Steve and Joe. You guys have kind of come together to become my extended family over the last year, you know, as we've kind of like merged these two groups. And so I guess my story will kind of like feather in some of that, you know, what Jeff just alluded to, as well as to a greater part, you know, explain why I don't deserve the great contributing member, much more of a mediocre contributing member. My story in AA or coming to AA is very similar to many. You know, I didn't show up in AA because I had found the secret sauce to life. I found the secret sauce to getting drunk or high, you know, and I was really good at that. You know, and just a little background. I grew up in Massachusetts, up in Western Mass in Liberalville. I mean, like, it doesn't get more liberal than where I grew up. You know, we still had active hippie communes and, you know, home of Elizabeth Warren type of place. And so the religion thing, when I did come to AA, wasn't really a big issue. It was an issue for me, though, because, you know, my parents divorced when I was fairly young. And when they did, I stayed with my dad. And he found God, but he found it in the Jehovah's Witnesses. And so for most of my formative years, I spent, you know, 4 or 5 days a week in Kingdom Hall, reading the Bible over and over with all of the extra appended literature that they provide, learning how to knock on doors with my little tie and my little suitcase, you know, learning how to speak to people with the Watchtower and the Awake magazine. I knew from a pretty early age that I didn't believe in God, but there was a lot of like guilt and baggage as I became more indoctrinated in my youth. Anyways, fast forward, that's all like the boring stuff. The more interesting stuff is how I became, you know, the drugstore cowboy and I found immediately my solution to life was drugs and alcohol, and drugs are part of my story, like most of us. You know, and I built that career in Massachusetts when we were hitting the opioid epidemic early on, like when Percocets and Vicodin and Oxycontin were readily available to any teenager that wanted them, and you could get handfuls of them. And so that's really where my story began. And it ended with this romantic idea that I was, you know, like Al Pacino in Scarface. In reality, I was Bubbles in The Wire, you know, like stripping copper with my little golf, like grocery cart. So yeah, so that's like what my drinking career looked like. It wasn't nearly as romantic as I like to, or I used to like to tell myself. It was pretty miserable, you know, and I came to that breaking point that most of us do, you know, that jump off point where it's like I really wanted to die, but I didn't have the guts to do it. Like I didn't have the guts to kill myself and I didn't know what to do. And so I tried to turn myself into the feds that weren't actually there. That didn't work. I ended up calling my dad and he dropped me off as far away as he could in Springfield, Mass to rehab. That's really how my AA journey began, was in a lockdown rehab, because it was winter in Massachusetts and it was the year of the Snowmageddon in 2010. And we were having some serious issues with snow that year. I decided since I was homeless, I would stay in treatment until the following spring, at which point then I would go back out, right? That was my plan, my master plan. And so they ended up getting me a bed at a halfway house in Worcester, Mass. In Worcester, Mass, I don't know if anyone's ever been to Massachusetts, but it's the armpit of Massachusetts. No one wants to be there. It's kind of like a rundown version of Tulsa. I certainly wanted to go to Boston. I tried to convince my case managers that I deserved to go to Boston. They didn't listen to me. They sent me to Worcester. So that did make it on my resentment list. Also, you know, Steve, I share some of the same resentments you had as well on my fourth step when I will get there too. So I ended up in Worcester, Mass. I had a case manager there at a halfway house for boys 18 to 24 years old. I barely made the cutoff. I was 24. And I was angry, and I was, you know, still am an atheist, right? I don't have a higher power. I don't believe in God. And my case manager there, he was a big Irish Catholic, ex Hell's Angel biker type of guy. And he was also really Catholic. And so he made me pray every meal at the house that I was there. And he would say, come on up, Satan, give the, you know, lead grace. And so, that was my introduction to the halfway house. Long story short, I really didn't think that I was going to stay there. I didn't think I was going to stay sober. What ended up happening was I became introduced to young people's meetings in Worcester. And there was actually a really vibrant community of young people in Worcester. You know, there was this meeting we used to go to on Wednesday night called Worcester Young People's. And you walk in and it's 120 young people, right? And they're, most of them in the front are excited to be there and they have big smiles on their face. And then the people in the back were like me, we're shuffling in our detox Reeboks. And we're just like, you know, figuring out who we can bang and how quickly we can get out of there. That was kind of like my introduction to AA. What ended up happening was there was this guy that stood up and he said, hey, I'm the young person's liaison to AA. If you're interested in learning more about it or sponsorship, come talk to me after the meeting. And I had this like grandiose idea of how I was going to tell him off and how this program wasn't going to work for me because I didn't believe in God. And I walked up to him and I ended up walking away with his phone number and what felt like a date. And so ultimately down the road, he would listen to me complain on the phone. This is how our relationship began. I would call him up. I would bitch and moan for 45 minutes. He would listen to me complain and then he'd say, okay, great. You know, go to bed, wake up tomorrow, give me a call. And eventually what happened was he started picking me up and we started reading. Long story short, we did the 12 steps, right? He was also Catholic and rather conservative. And we came to this point in my 12 steps in my journey when we were at that third step prayer thing, you know, in the big book, because he was a big book thumper. And he wanted me to pray and I wouldn't do it. And so he had to call his sponsor. Now, his sponsor, I consider to be kind of like a guru in AA in Worcester, kind of Hindu-y. He's very, you know, Eastern religion guy. And so my sponsor called him and he said, I don't know what to do with this guy. He's my new sponsee. He's my first sponsee ever. And he won't pray. And so Joe C, also from Worcester, said to my sponsor, Joe B, believe it or not, he said, Joe, you have to let him have his own journey. If he doesn't want to pray, don't make him pray. Right? Like it's like let go of control. And so I didn't pray. We did our fourth step. I stayed sober. That's the good news. A lot of my resentments were the same as what Steve mentioned. I had a resentment for the idea of God. I had a resentment for church, for Jehovah's Witnesses, for the Bible, for conservatives at the time. I have less of a resentment, but you know, I have more of an understanding, I guess. I did the 12 steps. Ultimately, my journey wasn't nearly as difficult in AA in Massachusetts just because there was more, I guess, less of an emphasis on God, right? So like you had the evangelicals that would show up in the meeting, but usually there were 2 out of 100 and they were kind of cringy and everyone knew who they were, right? They didn't like get cheered. What brought me to secular AA was when I moved to the South, right? So I moved from Massachusetts. At this point, I was in Boston and I got married and we had a baby and I had to take a job. I was in agriculture. I took a job in Miami and I walked to my first meeting in Miami and I said, hey, I'm from Massachusetts. And someone looked over at me and they said, oh, so you're an atheist. And that was my first introduction to a Southern meeting. Miami was a struggle. I ended up in Asheville, North Carolina after that, which was a much more pleasant experience because they have a little more open-mindedness. There's still some very churchy people there, but my favorite meeting out there was something called the Wharf Rats of Asheville. And their higher power, his name is Jerry Garcia, which is, you know, that was mind-blowing to me. I was just, wow. These guys are staying sober and their higher power is Jerry Garcia. It's amazing. So, you know, to each their own. But, you know, they're good people. But fast forward, I end up in Oklahoma. Long story. You know, I was in agriculture. I ended up working for a cannabis company. Met some people
that were struggling in the cannabis company. They wanted to, like, talk about being sober. And so we started a meeting in a yoga place in Broken Arrow. Jeff walks by. Jeff says, "Hey, I'm in AA, and I don't necessarily believe in God either. And also, you know, I was a Jehovah's Witness." And so we kind of connected. The real reason why I feel secular AA is so important, especially down here, is because my first introduction to AA in Oklahoma was at a group called the Action Group in Broken Arrow. And when I heard unanimously that their higher power's name was Jesus Christ, that scared the living hell out of me. Right. Like I can deal with Jerry Garcia, but, you know, Jesus Christ is your higher power. That's good for you, but you know, this isn't church, and it's probably not the best way to bring in new people. So, yeah, I mean, here we are, 2022. I'm in Oklahoma. I really have only, you know, I've been brought to secular AA by default because, you know, I like to go to meetings once or twice a week. I have a family with little kids. And so I try to incorporate one or two meetings a week into my program of recovery. I couldn't do it in Oklahoma without secular AA. Because I'd probably get kicked out, right? You know, very similar to Charles, me, you know, I get angry, right? And so I've had to learn how to grapple with that. And it's because of people in this group. It's because of people like Will. It's because of people like Joe and Charles and Jeff, that I have a place where, you know, I can just sit back and listen to your guys' amazing advice and I don't get angry. Like I don't spend the entire meeting with my arms crossed and I'm on guard thinking about like what this person said and how pissed off I am about what this person said. You know, I can just take it in and I don't have to share, you know, and I can walk away feeling better than I walked in, which is not the case at most of the meetings, you know, where I'm located. Most of those meetings, I walk away feeling angry and agitated and upset. And then, you know, that's not a good place for me as an alcoholic. You know, I think this is a great movement within AA. I think all the people that have come before that have helped build this. And with that, I don't really have anything else. I'm just really grateful that you guys are all here.
So. All right. Thank you so much, Jay. And you guys that spoke today, I'm so proud of you for stepping up and sharing your stories. And you're a big part of making sure the hand of AA is always there. So thank you again for sharing. We're going to turn the meeting over probably to Will because we're going to open it up for audience for all our group members here.
Yeah.
So thanks for giving us a chance here, Joe. Yeah. Joe and Will. Yeah.
Terrific. Thank you, Tulsa. We agnostics. Thank you. I think by those shares, you can, like, it's easy to see why I make 8 a.m. Phoenix time a priority to be in this meeting. There's just some wonderful people there. And there were 20 of us there this morning, and I got a ton from you all. So, on that note, you know, we opened up the meeting for shares. You know, we only ask a couple things here. We're going to use our virtual hands as Larry from Tulsa's already done. We support each other with encouragement and referencing a share that really meant something to us, so long as we don't try to give advice to anybody, or we want a safe place for everybody. Meeting is wide open for shares, and I'll start with Larry. Come on in, Larry.
Hi, Larry, alcoholic and somewhat confused agnostic, but hopeful. I existed in AA for decades and praying to whatever was there, and I knew that even was a lie, because I didn't think anything was there. But that's the only way I could get, I found that I could work in traditional AA. And it was such a relief when I mentioned to Jeff once that I was having struggles and trying to redo my whole approach as far as what I depend on and how I depend on it. And it's led me to a lot of realizations that I'm not going to lie anymore to myself. It just jams up the whole process. And I know I was struggling for what do I do in the place of prayer, because that was a big thing for me. It was a ritual with me many times in the day. And I've used an approach Will suggested, the metta kind of prayer meditation. And that's going very well, and I'm able to do it every day, and it is becoming a ritual, as well as mindfulness meditation. I'm very grateful to have a place to go where I don't have to carry on the lie. And it's such a relief, and I'm very grateful. Thank you.
Thanks, Larry. Great seeing you again today for the second time. Wonderful. You ever grateful, Jeb? Come on in.
Thanks, William. My name is Jeb, and I'm a grateful recovered addict alcoholic. And wow, what a wonderful example of what I call reality-based recovery, which is, I think, what AA did for me. It helped me to give, let go of all sorts of old ideas, what Bill called magical thinking. And people ignore the fact that he said many of us lived in a world of make-believe until we saw the childishness of it all. But it was natural. I had the early ideas of something outside of myself being in charge or giving a crap about anything that was going on in my life. But reality taught me that, no, there isn't anything out there. But AA taught me, it really helped me in my deconversion, or whatever you might call it, to let go of all that old stuff that had been poured into me as a child in church and school and so forth, to the point where I often give AA the credit for making me a total agnostic, a total atheist, actually. Because, I love the thing that I heard early on. It says, opinions are like assholes. We all have them and they all stink. Well, that's what belief means. Belief is just an opinion and it doesn't require any kind of evidence. So I find the evidence of a power within many people I've met over the last 40 some years that is what I needed to get in contact with and do whatever was possible to be in touch with it and follow it every day. So, I love the fact that pray means to ask. And it has always been that when I stopped pretending or acting as if and participating in the Lord's Prayer at the end of the meetings in Montana and Washington State, I would actually mumble something else. And initially I would simply mumble some AA prayer. But when I say God, the book actually taught me that what I was talking to was something that was a part of myself, an innermost self, a great, an unsuspected inner reality, great reality, the things that Bill called it elsewhere until he surrendered to that idea of a G-O-D. I'm so relieved that I learned I didn't have to pretend that somebody was taking care of me, and I had the responsibility of taking care of myself. And he even said that the purpose of the book was to help me to find that power. And then he also said, the only place I'm going to find it is deep within. So thanks for the wonderful share. And I think, one thing I'm so grateful about in secular AA, that it's all right to say that I'm queer in Colorado. And people can say whatever they can take that meaning anything else, but learning to be myself instead of somebody else, because everybody else is taken, is one of the great lessons of recovery. So thanks again for wonderful shares and encouragement. Love y'all.
Thank you, Jed. Always great having you. Oh, and Marsha, I'm so glad you didn't take off too soon. Come on in.
Hey there. Hey, family. Alcoholic addict. My problem is Marsha. Yeah, I was going to, because I do have to, something else I have to do, but I was like, okay, I can't run away without saying thank you. I say thank you to the boys. Like, I tell you, today has been one of those days where I've had a lot of realization about just how important men have become in my life again. Started with me crying in a meeting this morning that I attend where I'm the only woman that shows up there. And then it just kind of sort of extended from there. But some huge reality hit me today, that over the past 5 years of my recovery, like, I don't hate the opposite sex anymore for all these different reasons, because y'all have just provided such a comfortable space for me to get to know you all as human beings. The efforts you all put in as, you know, bettering yourselves, as dads. Oh my gosh, the stories that I've heard over the past year about what you all are doing. And I didn't grow up with a father. I don't know what that's like. And I think that's what has hit me the deepest, is that I, you know, if I ever wanted, I mean, I just have to turn to the fellowship, because like, I can say that I trust you. Like, there's men in this room that I would trust with my life. And I would never have said that 4 years ago. And then to like, listen to all your shares and everything like that today, has just been, like, it's just been phenomenal. Like, my heart is just exploding with how much appreciation I have to say that, you know, this is a fellowship where I can say that I trust. I trust, like, yes, with the women, that's, you know, that's a given. But to say that I feel comfortable in the rooms with all of you all, like, just thank you for being stand-up men and showing, like, the world what it's like to be exactly that. You know, not just for yourselves, but for your families and for the recovery community. Like, that was just, Steve, you are just too cute. I just absolutely adorable. that was just absolutely amazing. So, yeah. So thank you, not just to the panelists, but, you know, Joe and Jeb and all those men that I see at the meetings, like, constantly, that have just helped reconfirm for me that I don't have to be afraid of life. And that's what keeps me going, right? I don't have to be afraid of people. Or anything like that, you know. And if you weren't so awesome, I wouldn't be able to say that. So just thanks for being the great example of recovery, of what it's like to do the work, and this is the results of it. So love you all. Keep your heads out of your butt. And do the next right thing. And I do have to run. So thank you.
Thank you, Marsha. Glad you hung around. Always great hearing from you. There was a question actually. I just kind of addressed in the chat from Brian about the new website. There will be a lot more coming from the website. This was an opportunity just to rebuild it on a platform that we could have a rotation of service to help with it, because it was becoming a real obstacle. Old financials were there, old minutes. It was just not updatable. It was built on something that needed more developer prowess. So we built a site that many of us can help with now. And so we'll be doing that. And we have a meeting in January to determine all the rest of the content that will be there. So more will be revealed. We're going to bring in Davey. Come on in, Davey.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm Davey. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I'm late for the meeting. Like, I've never been to it before, and I get confused with the time zones. Like, I thought the meeting began 10 minutes ago, whereas, you know, the sharing was finishing, and it's like general sharing. Could you please tell me how long ago the meeting began?
We started an hour and 10 minutes ago. It was 2 p.m. Eastern.
Perfect. That's really helpful. Thank you so much. So I haven't heard enough that I could really make a meaningful share back, but thanks.
Okay. Well, thank you, David. I'm glad you found us anyway.
Exactly. Thanks.
I've got one more thank you to issue. I forgot about it earlier. But I want to thank all you folks that are active here in Secular AA. And I want to thank especially the people in my home group here in Tulsa, We Agnostics, because what you made possible for me was moving from the angry guy in traditional AA meetings to be able to sit in an AA meeting. You gave me the language to express myself and be true to myself and not be obnoxious in traditional AA meetings. That meeting that started off, I quoted the prayer to the flying spaghetti monster, and it's all about garlic, but thanks for the garlic bread and meatballs. And boy, they were pissed. I don't do that anymore because I learned a new way because of you guys to be true to myself and be able to talk in meetings and share. And it's expanded my life so much. See, I've known Larry casually for years. I had no idea what he was like, what he's about. And he came over to me one day. He said, let's talk a little bit, you know. And we talked because it's a result of being able to express myself in a secular way at traditional meetings that people get to hear about a different way to make AA. Maybe it's the only way AA would work for them. So thank you to you guys in my home group and all you guys that I've met in Cincinnati and Montreal and all around the world. You've helped me immensely.
Thank you, Jeff. And you have helped us too, trust me. Just before I bring Tim in, you know, a lot of people have been talking about in-person meetings, Zoom meetings, either or. Let me just say something about We Agnostics Tulsa. They have got it sorted. They have got a perfect, in my opinion, hybrid setup. They meet at a clubhouse. Jeff convinced the clubhouse to bring the Wi-Fi in high speed. They got a big TV there so that everybody in the meeting at the Take It Easy Club can see those of us on Zoom. They have an omnidirectional mic that's connected right in the middle of the table. You know, they're not using OWL or anything like that yet. It's not that complicated, but it is well run. Everybody can see each other and contribute. They go back and forth between in-room and Zoom shares. They have chairs rotating from, I chaired last week, somebody in room chaired this week. Awesome. So hybrid is possible for those meetings that think it's an either or. I don't think that that's necessarily true. And Tulsa We Agnostics has shown that to me. Let's bring Tim in.
I'm Tim. I appreciate everything I heard today. I particularly wanted to comment on the person that had the perspective of taking a perspective of the Lord's Prayer being just a willingness to ask for help. I think that was very helpful to me. I've also been a person that, you know, is still a GSR for a traditional group, and I somewhat tend to avoid that group quite a bit. You know, I kind of tend to gravitate towards the secular meetings and both the online community and my in-person meetings 5 times a week here at noon in Chattanooga. But I appreciate that perspective. That is kind of the right kind of perspective I have to have about it, to not feel that it's a divisive thing that's problematic for AA. And I recognize that a lot of people have found recovery through years and decades of AA with that, and taking that kind of perspective of it strictly being just a recognition of the need to ask for help, that I don't control everything in the world and I have to live in reality. So I appreciate that perspective. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate your share. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Will, how are you? Good. Thanks to the Tulsa group for those great shares. It's always good to get on to these once a month meetings and hear people from distant lands, so to speak. Jay's talk got me thinking a little bit. I live maybe an hour north of Worcester, so I'm pretty familiar with AA in this area and how it works. And the thing. Something that drives me a little bit crazy is here and on some of the Facebook groups, you hear people sharing and it's like people talk about traditional AA as if it's some huge monolith that's directed from on high and that every group is the same. And it's really not, you know, hearing Jay talk, you know, his experience in the Northeast. You run into people that are pretty gaudy, but the meetings on the whole are pretty middle of the road. And then, you know, you go to a place like Miami or like Tulsa and your meetings are, AA meetings are all autonomous. They're all separate entities. It's this huge anarchy, and each meeting is a reflection of the people that form the meeting. That's called the group conscience. And in some places, your views on the world and philosophies just aren't kind of fit with the majority of people. And the meeting is going to reflect what the majority of people want. I was sober for, God, I don't know, 22, 23 years in traditional AA because there wasn't any secular around. And I'd gone through the phases of sitting in a meeting and hearing somebody, beating the drum for believing in an intercessional deity, and God's got a plan, and all of this Christian stuff, and walk out of the room with my jaw clenched and just angry. And I think over the years, I've got to the point where maybe I've just matured in my recovery enough to be able to hear that stuff and just dismiss it as, that's their opinion. That's not my opinion. And I've begun to feel comfortable enough to be able to openly come out of the closet in meetings and share how I feel about being an atheist in AA, my spiritual approach. I'm okay with that. I find a lot of value in a face-to-face fellowship. My home group is a small discussion group. I've always had positions in that group, and I feel pretty comfortable there. There's a few people that are pretty reactionary. And then there's a few other people like me that are definitely on the other end of the spectrum, and everybody in between. And it's okay. I mean, that's the whole point of a group conscience, is to take and meld all of those opinions and come up with something that we all can feel somewhat comfortable with. All that said, I'm internally grateful for secular AA. I can walk in here and I don't have to sit there and listen to somebody, talking about, giving it all up to their higher power and whom they call God. I can spend an hour or 2 hours in a meeting with people, talking about recovery paths that are not the standard, by the book AA 12-step program. And that's really great. I hear things generally that are more useful for me than some of those other folks that I hear in the traditional meetings around here. So thanks for the shares. It was a great meeting and I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for sharing. Charles, come on in.
Hello, it's Charles, alcoholic. Thanks for letting me share again. Dave, I really like your share. I I've been in and out since 2003, and I've worked or attempted to work the 12 steps with, work in the book, out of the book with a sponsor that does the traditional by the book way. And, I identify with what you just said, Dave, sitting in meetings and leaving the meeting feeling more angrier than I did before I got there, because people will sit in the meeting and proselytize and preach and but now through the miracle of secular AA, I've educated myself on what AA's official stance is on certain matters, like the God word. They have a pamphlet 86. No one ever mentions pamphlet 86 in traditional meetings, but I do. And I definitely 100% feel some shade and some passive aggressive, condescending, facetious, remarks kind of thrown my way now that I've been courageous enough to share openly about what I believe or don't believe, because I've worked the 12 steps and I've gotten on the other side of it. And I did it with a sponsor that's atheist, and I didn't spontaneously combust, and nothing bad happened. I got on the other end of it, and I'm still skeptical about supernatural invisible fairy godfather. And I can sit in meetings and say, regardless of what crazy kook overzealous religious fanatic over there says that's not AA. That's just their belief. And, you know, that word belief has the word lie right in the middle of it. So if you believe everything you think, you'd be lying to yourself. You know, it's nice to come to meetings where, you know, people are talking, well, this is how I stayed sober in this situation. And I didn't have to invoke or imbue some sort of like magical entity that exists in some invisible dimension that we can't see or hear or whatever. So, and another one is pamphlet 11 about medications and AA, you know, there's a lot of information that AA puts out there for people in AA to educate themselves on, but they don't because they're in the boat and all they need is the book and the 12 and 12 and the daily reflections and everything else is just fringe, you know, and that doesn't apply because all they need is their God, their guns, their Bible, you know? So yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, Charles. And thanks again for participating today. You and the rest of the We Agnostics, Tulsans. How do we say, what do we call ourselves when we're from Tulsa?
Tulsans works.
I've heard Tulsans. Yeah.
Tulsans, yeah.
All right. I'm going with Tulsans. Oh, speaking of Asheville, I think somebody who was in the Asheville area here is going to come in. Come on in, Dale.
Hi, Dale.
Hey, I'm Dale. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, it was nice to hear somebody enjoy the wharf rats here at Asheville, right? It's a great meeting, but we actually have a secular meeting here that is far more secular than the wharf rats. Wharf rats are like everybody. But anyway, I've been hearing a lot of gratitude for secular meetings. I was very fortunate that secular meetings started in my hometown back in the mid-80s. This was in Boca Raton, Florida. And I was very excited when that happened. I mean, I can't tell you how excited I was. I mean, I feel like it saved my sobriety because I was like almost done with AA. I keep hearing that over and over and over when people are discovering secular AA, you know, their excitement and how it's improved their sobriety and allowed them to figure out how to work a program for themselves. I can't tell you how heartwarming it is every time I hear it, you know, and it's getting more frequent now with all the, you know, the explosion of Zoom and everything. You know, in the mid 80s, I thought that was the only one in the world. I had no idea anyone else existed. I had no idea. It wasn't until like 2014 that I found out there were other people out there. And it had everything to do with Roger C's website, Agnostica. And that's when I discovered that there were more of us out there. There were other meetings. It's been this incredible trip in secular AA. And I just love it. I absolutely love hearing how excited people are when they find it, because it just reminds me of where I was, and I'm still excited. Thank you very much, William, for putting this on. You know, the secular, the ICSA board is doing this great thing, bringing these speakers, and you found a great bunch here from Tulsa. And I've really enjoyed all the speakers. They're very enlightening, to say the least. So thank you very much for finding all them, Jeff. You did a great job.
Yeah, you sure did. Thank you, Dale. Yeah, and on a minute's notice, I confess our ICSA reach out, we were a little, I think we were just in a little hungover from the conference. And so we kind of realized late breaking news, we were without a group for this month, and this group stepped up in just such a great way. So appreciate it again. We are looking for a group for next month. So if you know of a group that might want to host our Storytime Speaker of the Month meeting, please let us know. you can email us. It's the website's there, or you can send a DM to me. Again, I'm going to say that we are looking for people that might want to help out with committees come new year. After the board meets, there's going to be a lot of things we want to get in the works and going. And so please look for some time in your schedule and avail yourself that you might avail yourself of and offer some service time. Be much appreciated. I want to thank Joe, as usual, for being the host for our ICSA Speaker of the Month meeting, and for all of you that showed up today. And with that, I will wish us all a wonderful 24, and hopefully we'll see you next month for the first of the year. Thank you all. Peace.